This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Terrorism in America, we'll talk about that, and the kulaks. We're going to talk about another horrible anniversary, a jobs report. We have so much to get to tonight, and I'm right. Why all this talk about white supremacy all the time? All the time. You hear it from every single cultural institution now, don't you? Every part of the system. President got up yesterday and said it.
The U.S. intelligence community is determined that domestic terrorism rooted in white supremacy is the greatest terrorist threat we face in the homeland. The greatest threat.
Oof, sounds scary. But it's well beyond President Poopy Pants. It's every institution. FBI, our national security institutions, they'll echo those same words. In fact, they've been lying now, manipulating data to try to back up those words. We know this from FBI whistleblowers who say they're very clearly padding these stats, trying to make it look like white supremacy is a big problem. Education system says the same thing. Entertainment, all across our culture, all across our nation, white supremacy, white supremacy, white supremacist terror, white supremacy, white supremacy. Why? What's the reason? No, it's not because white supremacist terrorists are any kind of a serious threat in this country. Are there white supremacists and violent ones in the country? Well, of course, it's a country of 300 million people. There is race supremacists in every skin color group and very, very violent ones. But why all this focus on whitey? Why white supremacists? Doesn't make sense, does it? It's weird because you've probably never met one. I've never met one. Who are they? What are these, Klan guys, Nazi guys? Do they have tattoos on their faces? How do we identify these people? So why? Why has our system made this gigantic boogeyman an enemy who doesn't really exist? He's kind of a phantom of their imagination. Why is that? Well, what's their goal? We've talked about this many times. You know. What's the overall goal for them? To make you what? An enemy of the state. The goal is to make you an enemy of the state. If they can make you an enemy of the state, then that will give them the legal justification they want to send FBI, military, law enforcement, anyone after you to hurt you because you're an enemy of the state. If I'm in charge and I make you an enemy of the state, what that gives me to do is it gives me the freedom. It gives me the freedom to aim all the guns of the state at you so I can fix that problem. So that's their goal. And that's what they're doing. Keep in mind you're dealing with communists, anti-humans. This is going to matter. Just stay with me for a moment. And what do communists do? Because they're anti-humans, and as an anti-human, the individual life means nothing. It means less than nothing. They're against humanity. It means nothing. What that does for them is it gives them the freedom to simply group people up as this group is likely to be my ally, on my side, and this group is likely to not be on my side. Stalin's famous for this. Everyone knows about the kulaks in Ukraine. What a lot of people may not know is when Stalin was murdering all those people within the Soviet Union, one of the main groups he was after were the Poles, Polish people. People with any Polish background, people originally from Poland. Stalin decided these are the people most likely to be spies or saboteurs or against me politically. So what did he do? He made them enemies of the state. Told every part of the state apparatus, that's the enemy, that's the enemy. Find the Poles, find people with Polish heritage. They're looking through phone books for people with Polish last names so they can go shoot them in the back of the head. Are you gonna end up catching some innocent people in there? Sure, but you're an anti-human. What does it matter? Well, our communists operate the exact same way and for the exact same reason. That was Joe Biden, of course, acting like some sort of a civil rights hero. Democrats, communists, they have identified black people in this country only by their percentages, not by the individual black person on what that person may or may not believe. They sit back and they look at the percentages and they see, okay, we got black people. They're always with us. They're going to vote with us 92, 93% of the time. So that's an ally. That's an ally. That we must protect them and reward them whenever we possibly can. That's our ally. They're going to help us keep power. They're going to put us in power. Oh, whitey. Specifically, these white middle class people and poor white people. Rich white people will go Democrat all day long, but these white middle class people, they vote Republican overwhelmingly, especially the married ones. Married middle class people, men and women, overwhelmingly vote Republican. Got a problem there. That group in and of itself is very clearly an enemy. And look, communists like Joe Biden, more specifically the communists who run him, when they sit down and look at America, I know you don't look at it that way, and I'm glad you don't, but you have to understand that is how they look at it. They sit down, they got a piece of paper, okay, so we got black people over here, they're in the allies column, white people, they're definitely in the enemies column. And so now they've begun to build this narrative over and over and over and over again. White supremacy, white supremacy, white supremacy, white supremacy, domestic white supremacist terrorists. And did you notice recently what they used it as a justification for? You remember the Catholic memo out of the FBI Richmond field office that stated they need to and intended to infiltrate the Catholic Church? Why did they say they needed to do that? What was the justification? Do you remember the memo? White supremacy. Ah. That's where it's going to pop up, guys, right there. The endless calls and screaming about white supremacy aren't because it exists. It's because it is the central thing in an effort to turn you into an enemy of the state. Which is ironic because the biggest terror threat in America today is the state. It is. We have an FBI that is a threat. It is a clear and present danger to the United States of America. We have a president who is as well. A president who sent 5,400 emails, according to the National Archives, using a pseudonym, using a fake name. A fake name. Almost screwed me up there. Using a fake name. Why? Because he's one of the elite class. He's part of our government. He's corrupt. He's sold you out 1,000 times over to enrich himself and his family. That's why. These people are the true terrorists in this country. By the grace of God, it sounds like Kevin McCarthy is getting closer to impeaching him.
So, if you look at all the information we've been able to gather so far, it is a natural step forward that you would have to go to an impeachment inquiry. And just so your viewers understand what that means, that provides Congress the apex of legal power to get all the information they need.
Yeah. Boy, that sounds like he's serious. Or it might be serious, just anytime soon here. Now, maybe you're thinking right now, Jesse, that's too far calling these people terrorists. Jesse, they're not terrorists. Jesse, how could you call our government terrorists? What are you talking about? Okay. Well, let's talk about that. What makes a terrorist in your eyes? What pops up in your head, in your mind? It's okay, there's no wrong answer. What pops up in your mind when I say terrorist? This is a terrorist. If I said somebody who kills innocent people, completely innocent people, non-combatants, that's obviously someone you would probably consider to be a terrorist, right? And then you'd think back to those videos, all those Al-Qaeda videos, ISIS videos, about all the times the terrorists would kill people, whether they were bombing a theater in France or whether they were cutting off the head of a journalist, whatever these terrorist groups would do, what would they usually do after they do something terrible? What would they do? Remember? They would put out a video. They would put out a video bragging about what they just did. They weren't ashamed of it. After they killed innocent people, non-combatants, they would put out a video bragging about what they did. Remember that? Remember that about the terrorists? Which is so funny because today is the 2-year anniversary of a Reaper drone, an American Reaper drone, killing 10 people in Afghanistan. Not combatants, not Taliban, not ISIS. Completely innocent people. How innocent, you may ask? Well, 7 of them were children. The American government, the ones I just called terrorists, killed 10 innocent people, 7 children. And after they got done killing those adorable 7 kids, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, just like ISIS, put out a little video.
We know from a variety of other means that at least one of those people that were killed was a ISIS facilitator. So were there others killed? Yes, there are others killed. Who they are, we don't know. We'll try to sort through all that. But we believe that the procedures at this point, I don't want to influence the outcome of an investigation, but at this point we think that the procedures were correctly followed and it was a righteous strike.
Righteous strike. There was no ISIS influencer. There was nothing but 10 innocent people there, murdered by this government, and then called righteous. And do keep in mind, after those 7 innocent babies were killed by our government, they did do an exhaustive investigation. And at the end of that investigation, they figured, ha ha, nobody screwed up.
What I can tell you is we looked at this thing very, very comprehensively. And again, we acknowledge that there were procedural breakdowns. Processes were not executed the way they should have been. But it doesn't necessarily indicate that an individual or individuals have to be held to account for that. But look,
Is there discipline inside the Pentagon at all? I mean, maybe there are no charges brought up, but is anyone demoted or disciplined for what happened that day?
What we are going to do, there's not going to be individual discipline as a result of this, Willie. But what we are going to do is learn from this, and we're going to enact and improve our procedures and our processes to try to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Terrorists. Just remember, we don't have a white supremacist terrorist problem in this country. We have a government terrorist problem in this country. And the reason every part of our system pushes this phantom white supremacist problem is because they want to send the FBI to your door to kill you or imprison you. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk to a veteran of Afghanistan next. Maybe we'll ask him about, do you think we'll ask him about some of this before we ask him about that? Let's get to this. Let's get to something good. Saving animals. Look, we all see that dog running along the side of the road. We've all seen it. It's horrible, isn't it? Most often, the dog is not lost. People, I just can't believe this happens, but it does. People just take their dogs and decide they don't want them anymore, and they just take that loyal creature and they just dump them on the side of the road. But what happens? Well, Lord willing, Delta Rescue gets their hands on them first. What's Delta Rescue? The world's largest no-kill, care-for-life animal shelter. The world's largest. That dog, if taken in by Delta Rescue, will have a wonderful life for the rest of its life. That's what you support when you go give to deltarescue.org. They do this through your donations. That's how they do it. This is a wonderful organization that is out there. That dog you see on the side of the road that broke your heart, that's how you save it. DeltaRescue.org. Go give what you can. All right? We'll be back.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
In reference to the checking of his watch, that didn't happen just once. That happened on every single one that came out of that airplane. It happened on every single one of them. They would release the salute, and he looked down at his watch. On every last one, all 13, he looked down at his watch.
Joining me now, William Ruger, PhD, Afghanistan vet. He's a Navy Reserve officer, president of the American Institute for Economic Research. That was Darren Hoover there in that video, father of fallen Marine Staff Sergeant Taylor Hoover. Okay, William, they don't act like they care. They've never acted like they cared. I don't know if cold or horrible is a way to describe that. I don't know what best way to describe it is, but from the press conference statements to the accounts of the parents when they met them, they just, no one in this administration seems to give a crap.
Well, look, this was a problem for the length of this forever war, if you will, right? I mean, for two decades, Afghanistan was kind of forgotten by many. And then when it was paid attention to, we had that uplift in the Obama administration, but very soon thereafter, it kind of fell off the map. And, you know, that's been a real problem with these wars in the Middle East, is there really a buy-in for this type of approach to American foreign policy there? And I think you ultimately saw that there just wasn't that much concern. And of course, we see who pays the price, right? American men and women in uniform are the ones that have paid the price. And the question is, are we honoring them enough for that sacrifice that they made? And I think that ultimately we did the right thing there by withdrawing and getting out of this forever war. But it's really sad that it took that long for us to realize that we had largely accomplished most of our goals there. And the ones that we did not accomplish were ones that weren't really consistent with the national interest. So all in all, it's a very depressing scene in many ways, not just what happened at Abbey Gate, but what happened throughout the 20 years of this conflict.
What? How do we get to this place where our foreign policy has oftentimes, it seemed many times, especially over the decades, involves getting in a conflict where young men die with no clear objective? I just, historically, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life, and yet that's American foreign policy. We'll get involved, young men can die, and there's never a clear objective. Just go die for a while, maybe something vague like hearts and minds, but other than that, good luck, fellas.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with an ideological approach to foreign policy, one that is focused on ideals that are really hard and slippery to get your hands around, as opposed to kind of the kind of real tangible issues of national interest, the kind of irreducible national interests of your safety, your economic prosperity, the American way of life here at home, right? Those are things that you can wrap your arms around. Those are the things that you can understand why people would go fight and potentially make the ultimate sacrifice for. But when you've expanded those war aims, like we did in Afghanistan, well beyond those vital national interests, then again, it gets slippery, right? Because lots of different interest groups, especially when you're involving lots of different countries, we had, what, over 40 countries involved in the ISAF campaign there. Everybody's got a little bit of a different answer to that. Different Americans had different views about why we were there. Was it to build girls' schools in Helmand? Was it to promote a campaign against Al-Qaeda? Was it to rebuild that country in our image? Was it something that even mattered very much, especially after the Iraq War started and we turned our attention? Again, just a terrible approach. And really, I think an approach in Afghanistan that shows you the problems of American foreign policy writ large, right? We have not focused on our vital national interests. That has not been the focus of American foreign policy. Instead, we've had these goals of what we might call primacy, which is not very tangible, but this idea that the America has to remain dominant in all of the major parts of the world. But what does that actually mean? What are we willing to spend blood and treasure for? And then also these ideological goals of democracy promotion by the bayonet that we saw in place after place. And these have all led to failures, right? If you think about the Iraq War, the ultimate failure of the last 30 years of American foreign policy, right? 4,000 Americans dead, tens of thousands wounded, trillions of dollars spent, and for what? Afghanistan, similar. Again, not the original project in Afghanistan, but the nation-building project. Then you have Libya, which is an underrated problem in American foreign policy, right? Where you had arms flowed out, terrorists flowed in, you had a civil war in the country, you had destabilization of areas around it like Mali, and then a refugee crisis that led to destabilization in Europe due to hundreds of thousands of refugees going into Europe. So just so many own goals. Syria, right? That's another one. Oftentimes ill-defined projects that we throw soldiers and airmen and Marines and sailors at, but oftentimes ill-defined. I mean, look at our Syria project. Are we there to help protect Kurds? Are we there to promote the future of regime change against Assad? Are we there for ISIS? Right? All of these things coming together, no one really understanding what we're going to do when we leave, what our exit strategy is. And Colin Powell told us, you know, 30 years ago, you got to have an exit plan, right? That's how you make sure that you don't get bogged down in these forever wars. But again, it's all about this very ideological primacist agenda that we're seeing that is very much in contrast to an America first approach that looks at America's vital interests and then makes trade-offs and where we could tell soldiers, hey, this is why you're going downrange, this is what you're fighting for. And it makes sense if your parents get a letter someday that it meant something for your country.
William, what do we make of the drastic increase in suicide? Study came out today. Veteran suicide has soared tenfold in the last 15 years. That is so awful on so many levels. In what ways, I'm sure there's more than one, are we failing the men and women who go fight for this place?
Yeah, I mean, it's terrible to see this, to see people come back from overseas or see them come end their lives when they're in service to their country. It's just a terrible tragedy. And I'm not sure what we can do, right? The military puts a lot of resources into trying to protect the mental health of its veterans. I know that when I came back from Afghanistan, I was there in 2008, 2009, and we had to transit back through Kuwait to go through some of this kind of post-deployment training to make sure that we had resources available to us, to make sure that people who had issues, you know, particularly those who faced combat, that they had some of those resources. But once they get back to the U.S. into their lives and their communities, particularly for people who transit out of active duty or who are reservists, they may not have the support around them that they need. I guess the message is that if you know, you're a veteran and you're struggling with mental health issues, get help. Talk to, you know, your fellow soldiers, airmen, Marines, sailors. You know, don't just keep it bottled up. You know, I think what our country needs to tell them, what I'll tell them right here, is that we value you. We value what you did. Even when we were let down by civilian leaders and even military leaders at the Pentagon, that you did your duty. You did the best that you can do, and that we honor that. I always put the challenge to our civilian leaders when they get us into these wars that oftentimes have these deleterious effects on the home front, not just abroad. You know, that's why we have to make sure that we're only fighting wars that are absolutely necessary, because these things have just terrible consequences. You know, my grandfather was a veteran of World War II. He fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He was wounded and was in a POW camp. And, you know, people struggle with those experiences. And, you know, I think that we're putting more effort into that than back in my grandfather's day to try to deal with some of these problems. But, you know, they're still terrible. War is hell, as you know, as kind of famous saying goes. And again, that's why we have to have a restrained approach to foreign policy, right? Do what we have to defend our national interests, but don't go well beyond that in a way that actually undermines our safety and undermines our security here at home, and puts a grave, I think, you know, cost on these people who come home after fighting these. And again, the issue of the returning warrior has been one that is as old as literature itself. It goes all the way back to Odysseus and Homer, right? And in an early part of my career, I did a fair amount of research on this, about how combat and military service affects things like marriages, how it affects communities. There's lots of research out there on how it affects these individual soldiers and the warriors that we send to war. A lot of that research shows just how costly it can be. And so it needs to be part of our cost-benefit analysis when we decide to go to war, because, you know, think of all those veterans that are coming home and facing these problems. Let's not just think about the schools we've built abroad, or the fact that we can claim a kind of an initial success like you saw after the Iraq War, and then it peters out.
Yeah. William, thank you so much. That was awesome. Come back soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. We got some job numbers today. John Carney's going to join us next. We're going to talk about those jobs numbers. Before we talk to John, before we dig into the economy, let's make sure we have some sort of a protection plan for ourselves, for our personal wealth, for our retirement account. We have to protect ourselves against this inflation, the interest rates, these people running the debt off the cliff. But how do we do that, right? I mean, you're not the head of the Fed. I'm not the head of the Fed. What do we do? All you can do is buy precious metal. That's it. Things you can touch and feel. That's what's reliable. You know what's reliable? Look at a history book. What had value 1,000 years ago? 2,000 years ago? Does that same thing exist today with value? Yes, it's gold and silver. Oxford Gold will mail it to you. Gold, silver coins to your front door. They'll also weave it into your 401k and IRA, raising the floor on just how bad things can get if that bubble pops. All you have to do is call them. 833-995-GOLD. Let them handle it all for you, all right? 833-995-GOLD, Oxford Gold Group. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
We got some economic news today, and we need some help to make sense of it. Job openings, they've dropped to their lowest level since March of 2021. That sounds like good news. I mean, I guess maybe people filled the jobs or something. I mean, let's just guess people filled the jobs. You know what? No, let's not guess. Let's ask John. John Carney is going to join us now, Breitbart News, Finance, and Economics Editor. Okay, John, is it good news? Why have job openings dropped to their lowest level in a couple of years?
So part of it, you're right. People took jobs. There was a decent amount of hiring through the month. Not a lot of firing went on. And part of it is that employers are reducing the number of openings they have out there. If you look closely at what happened in the numbers, you see that over the last couple months, employers have backed off of the massive amount of hiring they wanted to do earlier this year. And frankly, last year, there was a lot of hiring. So some of that is because people have taken the jobs. And some of it is that employers are looking at this situation and saying, you know what, I may have enough people. I may be able to replace some people with technology. Wages have gone up, so it's no longer as cheap as it was to hire people. And they're facing a lot of cost pressure still on the from inflation. So that also saps a little bit of their willingness to bring on new workers. And frankly, they can read the headlines as well as you and I can. They see unemployment's only at 3.5%. So they know there's not that many workers out there looking for jobs, which makes it much harder to hire anyone.
John, where did all the workers go? I have so many friends that either own a small business or run a little sandwich shop here in town, or they're managers of an auto dealership. And these people cannot find anybody, John. They lament to me anytime work comes up on the weekend, whenever we're hanging out, I can't find anyone. I can't even get someone to show up for an interview. He'll show up for the interview and won't even show up to the job. Where is everybody?
Yeah, so a big thing that happens is a lot of older workers left the workforce altogether during the pandemic. They said, look, they reevaluated their life and they said, I'd rather hang out with my grandkids. I don't want to keep working in the formal economy. So a lot of younger workers then fill the slots that some of those older workers filled. And so so you might think, well, why am I facing a problem? I wasn't trying to hire young people anyway. Yeah, but a lot of the young people took the jobs some of the older workers took. And so that's what happened to a lot of the workforce, is basically earlier than expected retirement has led to a diminished workforce at this point.
How are the people retiring early when the value of the dollar is down like 20%? How are you retiring early?
Right, it's very hard. But remember, if you own your house has probably gone up in value a lot since the beginning of the pandemic. So it, particularly if you owned your house without a mortgage on it, you have a lot of equity that you've built up. And even if you had a mortgage, you probably have a very low interest rate mortgage. And so you've been able to build up a lot of equity. People are taking out loans against that. The stock market, frankly, has done very well over, you know, not just over the last couple of years. Sure, you know, had a bad time during the worst of the pandemic, but basically over the last 6-7 years, it's been a, and frankly, over the last decade, we've had a big run. So a lot of people who were saving for retirement looked out. I mean, if you read these articles about, you know, that people write into newspapers and websites like MarketWatch and say, you know, I'm 58, can I retire? I'm 62, can I retire? A lot of people are retiring at an age where they might not have otherwise. Sure, that will mean diminished spending power for themselves in the future. But I think the pandemic, frankly, changed people's sort of mental equation when it came to that.
This isn't the only jobs news we're going to get this week. We have more coming. What is it and what do we expect?
Sure. This is very important because it'll feed into something we get at the end of the week. One of the most crucial ratios in the economy right now is the amount of people who are unemployed compared with the amount of job opening. That is the measure of tightness in the labor market. Traditionally, historically, this has averaged about 0.6%, meaning there are more people unemployed than there are job openings, that we couldn't actually fill them all up. When you got to about 1-to-1, that was actually a really good job market. We're now at a situation where we have 1.5 openings for every unemployed person. At the end of the week on Friday, we're gonna get the latest jobs numbers. That'll tell us how many jobs we created in August and how many, what the unemployment rate is, how many unemployed people there are. We're expected to create a lot fewer jobs than we have been for most of this year. The labor market is expected to cool, but that unemployment rate is probably gonna stick around 3.5%. As a result, we're probably gonna have stick around this ratio of 1.5 people unemployed, or sorry, job openings for every one unemployed person. That's still a very tight labor market. That will worry the Fed that inflation could actually pick back up again, either later this year or early next year.
Oh, wonderful. I can't wait to see how they handle that. John, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having me, man.
Great. Fed's going to get worried again. You know what happens when the Fed gets worried about inflation? You know what happens? Inflation happens. Yeah, and then interest rate hikes. That's what happens. That's how they respond. Ah, it sucks. It sucks. It sucks almost as bad as your dog dying. It sucks when your dog dies, doesn't it? It's the worst friggin' feeling in the world. I've buried more dogs than I can possibly count. It's awful. I'll be honest with you. I like that Rough Greens fixed Fred's digestive issues, and it fixed his ear infections. He used to get ear infections all the time. I would still give Fred Rough Greens, even if it hadn't fixed those issues, because I know Rough Greens is going to make Fred live longer. And I want my dog to live longer. Rough Greens is giving your dog nutrition for the first time ever. All-natural nutritional supplement created by naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black that you pour on your dog's food. Pour it on your dog's food. There's no nutrition in the food. It's dead food. I'm sorry, dog food's dead. There is nutrition in Rough Greens. Everything your dog needs. Vitamins, minerals, omega oils, probiotics. And you get a free bag to start out. All you pay for is the shipping. Roughgreens.com/Jesse is where you get that free bag, or you can call them. 833-33-MY-DOG. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
And I think the first part of this issue that should be articulated is AI is kind of a fancy thing. It's, first of all, it's two letters. It means artificial intelligence.
Joining me now, somebody who probably, I can never guess, but probably knows a little bit more about AI than Dome does, Joe Allen. He's the author of the book Dark Eon, Transhumanism and the War Against Humanity, which is out today. Okay, Joe, well, we don't have to get into Dome's explanation. Would you, first of all, for those of us who are old, explain what transhumanism even means? What is this fancy college term?
Well, Jesse, I think you need to think about the changes that have happened in just the recent past technologically. Think about trans children. Think about smartphone children. Think about autonomous weapons such as drone swarms. Think about just the power the internet has had over political movements. That's been a sweeping change in the last two decades. Transhumanism is the desire to accelerate that change and accelerate that change to the point that human beings aren't just dependent upon machines. The human beings have actually fused with their machines. Quite literally, including anticipated anyway, brain implants to connect one's mind to artificial intelligence. It sounds very sci-fi, not unlike a World Wide Web sounded sci-fi in the 60s when that project began. I wrote the book to really map out the ways in which this belief system has come to occupy not only the most powerful militaries on Earth, including our own, especially funding through DARPA, but also the most powerful corporations on Earth, including especially Google. And your listeners will probably recall that the wealthiest man on Earth, Elon Musk, is working not only on an artificial intelligence system that he anticipates to be superhuman at XAI, but also a brain implant, Neuralink, to link one's mind to that AI.
Okay, this is, I'm 42 going on 82. This is so far beyond me, Joe, that I want you to keep going and explain this to me. How far away are we talking about when it comes to this kind of technology here? Brain implants that are communicating with AI? Surely you're talking about 500 years from now, right?
Well, Elon Musk anticipates 5 to 10, but he's always known for overselling. One thing that I think Elon Musk gets quite right is that we are already cyborgs. This is something he's repeated many times. Transhumanists talk about this all the time. The radical changes that have taken place, not only socially, but psychologically, due to the ever-present smartphone and people have basically melded their lives to that smartphone, they see that as a stepping stone on the way to first non-invasive brain-computer interfaces. These are regularly used, by the way, just skull caps reading the brain. These are regularly used in, say, cognitive therapy. Even in video gaming, NextMind has a commercial non-invasive brain-computer interface. But when you're talking about actual brain implants, a lot of people are surprised to learn that there are already implanted brain-computer interfaces that allow locked-in, paralyzed patients to move cursors on screens, to actually, now they can type words, they simply think words, and it goes through the electrode into the computer and types out the words, and also to control robotic limbs. Neuralink is just getting started. They just got FDA approval, so they'll have human patients very, very soon. But BlackRock Neurotech, funded by Peter Thiel, hit the 50-patient mark just this year. And then another smaller company, Synchron, whose CEO, Tom Oxley, speaks a lot like Elon Musk on this. He doesn't see it just for locked-in paralyzed patients, of which they have around a dozen who are troded up with brain-computer interfaces. He sees it as being a future commercial product so that human beings, in his instance, can share their emotions electronically. For Musk, it's more of an intellectual endeavor. How do you keep pace with artificial intelligence as it blows past humans? That is the central mythos to transhumanism, that artificial intelligence and all of these technologies, artificial intelligence, robotics, brain-computer interfaces, genetic engineering, that all of these technologies are going to draw human beings up to the next level, in essence, to make human beings like gods. This is how they speak of it oftentimes. This is how it's spoken of among the critics. And I think that people, if they do not wrap their heads around this ideology, this notion that human beings are to be saved by technology, that technology will in fact be the highest power in the universe, that they're going to be in for a lot of surprises, even if the tech stagnates. What you see at the World Economic Forum, again, what you see at Google, what you see at Meta, what you see at OpenAI and Microsoft, what you see in academia from Oxford to MIT, to Harvard, and of course, what you see among the real cutting edge scientists at DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency at the US Department of Defense, and other military scientists across the US military, all of them are voicing this viewpoint, this mythos, that the future of humanity is to merge with the machine. And as if it wasn't creepy enough that they would want to kind of draw consenting adults into this, the rollout, the mass rollout of one-on-one AI tutors, I think will have a profound transformative effect on those students who actually adopt it, of which I anticipate it to be many millions, as it's being pushed by Bill Gates or Khan Academy. Both of them are doing this. What you're talking about is taking away that transmission of culture from a wise adult, presumably a knowledgeable adult, guiding a child or children through their lessons into something like intellectual maturity. And you are transforming that process into one in which a child simply learns from a machine. A child becomes conditioned and dependent. And eventually, you could say that without a brain interface, there is a sort of human AI symbiosis, a sort of relationship in which without that computer, the child is somehow naked or the child is somehow unarmed, unable to think normally. Now, if you've known any children who are already completely addicted and attached to their smartphones, you know that this process really is already underway. And so there's two or three different options from here. But unless you think that this is it, that we've capped out, that the technology will go no further, I think that the viewpoints of transhumanists, even if you reject what they want entirely, have to be taken seriously because these technologies do appear to be converging and rocketing ahead.
Good grief.
I can't wait to read this. The book is Dark Eon, Transhumanism in the War Against Humanity. Joe, that is freaking fascinating, man. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jesse. I hope you enjoy it.
It's so far beyond me. Maybe it's right up your alley, but it's so far beyond me. But I talk to smart guys like Joe all the time now, and they tell me the same thing. These days are upon us. This linking brains and all kinds of stuff. I'm sure human beings trying to transform themselves into gods, I'm sure that's going to work out well, right? Every other time we've tried that throughout history, that ended up working out great, didn't it? All right, we have Light in the Mood next. Light in the Mood. That won't involve putting anything in your brain. But let's do this. Let's lighten your wallet first. Your wallet, it doesn't want to pay for that timeshare anymore. It's tired of those annual fees. It's tired of the special assessments. And you've convinced yourself, or you've allowed the timeshare company to convince you, that you have to do it. You have no choice. Sorry, you're locked in. You signed the contract. They always give you the section of the contract you signed to when you complain. Didn't they do it? Now you got to check out page 5, paragraph E, section B, where it says it's for life. Lone Star Transfer, they've read all those sections. They've seen all these contracts. And yet, when you call Lone Star Transfer, there's a 99% chance they will get you legally and permanently out of your timeshare. That's what you call a guarantee. Family company. They've helped over 18,000 people get out forever, legally and permanently. Make a phone call. 844-310-2646. They're wonderful to deal with. Stop paying. You don't have to. Or go to LoneStarTransfer.com. All right? Get out of your timeshare. We will be back with Light in the Mood.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Would you guys consider anything less than a championship to be a failure from this year?
I wouldn't say anything is a failure, especially because we all grow every day. Obviously, the goal is a championship. There's no doubt in that, and that's the goal. We want to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
For all the biggest stories in women's basketball, plus exclusive interviews with the game's brightest stars.
So to be here, I think it's one that we definitely don't take for granted. But we also know, you know, that's just one stop along the way, and we're hoping to, you know, make a run.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. Three times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
I love stories of people standing up for themselves against this evil system we have here. And I'm going to tell you something. You want something that's going to encourage you? I hope it will. I find it encouraging. I find it encouraging that I talk to my sons. I have sons, 12 and 14. And they tell me not just their belief system and how against all this evil they are. They tell me about their friends. We are raising a generation of hardcore anti-communists, and it freaking excites me. Before we get to that, let's get to this. Eden Pure Thunderstorm. You need to clean the air in your home, your office. It has smells to it. It's not that it's dirty. It's not. It has smells. We have smells, human beings. Pets have smells. What we cook has smells. Maybe you're in there burning heaters, keeping it old school, but you've got smells in there. You don't have to cover them up with your weird little oil things and candles. You know you can take those smells out of the air with Eden Pure Thunderstorm. It will remove them from the air. It doesn't even hardly make any noise. It's just this little black box that goes right in the outlet in the wall. I own 9 of these little miracles now, and they sell 3 packs of Eden Pure Thunderstorm, $200 off. Free shipping, too. All you have to do is go to EdenPureDeals.com and use the code Jesse. That's how you get $200 off your 3-pack, all right? EdenPureDeals.com, code Jesse. Now, kid got in trouble in school for sporting the Gadsden flag on his backpack. Kid and his parents stood up for themselves.
Do they know what the Gadsden flag is? That it's a historical flag?
So they're, the reason that they do not want the flag, the reason we do not want the flag displayed, is due to its origins with the Revolution, slavery and slave trade.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with slavery. That's like the Revolutionary War patch that was displayed when they were fighting the British. Like, that wasn't, that's the revolution. Maybe you're thinking of like the Confederate flag?
Okay, I
am just here to enforce,
I am here to enforce the policy that was provided by the district.
He's allowed to wear that. If you like go on their website, it like says in big letters. You allow some patches, but not other patches.
Other kids have patches, like other names, some like the American flag in their backpacks.
Yeah, but it's hard because he keeps missing class for this. So
I understand that.
Yeah, and I mean, we teach him to always stick up for your beliefs, and I mean, you're going over the revolution this for 7th grade. I mean, the founding fathers stood up for what they believed in against unjust laws. This is unjust.
Well done, Mom. Well done, kid. Kids are going to be all right. All right? You're going to be all right. I'll see you tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations, thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whatever team Fee is on has a chance to win a championship.
I'm Christina Williams, host of the podcast, In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams. The WNBA playoffs are here, and I've got the inside scoop on everything from key matchups and standout players to the behind-the-scenes moments you won't find anywhere else.
It's really, really hard to be the champions, but we have to remember how it feels and embrace the new challenge that we have.
So listen to In Case You Missed It with Christina Williams, an iHeart Women's Sports production in partnership with Deep Blue Sports and Entertainment on iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ben Ferguson.
And I'm Ted Cruz. 3 times a week, we do our podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz.
Nationwide, we have millions of listeners.
Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we break down the news and bring you behind the scenes, inside the White House, inside the Senate, inside the United States Supreme Court.
And we cover the stories that you're not getting anywhere else.
We arm you with the facts to be able to know and advocate for the truth with your friends and family.
So download Verdict with Ted Cruz now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.